I just realized what you meant, Ailish.
What? Oh, the fan morning show is worth it by nightstand. All right, you can put me on blast. I don't mind. It's fine. You don't have Carl's on the line yet.
No. That's a bit incredible. Okay. That's truly
all right,
incredible.
I asked the guys quickly. I was like, what's the Senior Bowl? Okay, yeah, I'm not going to pretend to know what the Senior Bowl is. And I said, is it old guys? Is it old guys? Like, wouldn't that be kind of fun, like old retired guys? But it's actually seniors in college.
I thought you were making fun of Blake and I, saying, is it for old guys? That's the way I first read it.
No.
Because I said no. And then
no, Ailish is thinking that Charles Davis is out there, like, playing safety.
Yeah, I would love to watch Ailish, that.
Ailish thought that the Senior Bowl was actually the elderly hit full pads.
I could ask Charles each other.
No, Ailish, that is not what the Senior Bowl is.
All right. Let's bring in our fourth member of the team, Charles Davis, NFL and CBS color analyst and NFL Network. Charles, how about this? We changed the Senior Bowl from college seniors to, like, seniors. Senior adults. Wouldn't that
be
better?
Bad idea. You're not doing good today.
Good morning.
You love it already.
I hope you're doing well. And Ailish, I love the idea and the thought. The reality is that would just be absolute carnage.
Yeah.
Does anyone remember when the NBA All-Star Weekend also involved, like, what they called a Legends game?
Yes.
And guys who had been long retired would play a game. And you're talking about ACLs, hamstrings, the whole deal. I think Norm Nixon blew his knee where everything rolled up into his thigh.
And they
quickly realized this is a really, really bad idea. Could you imagine this? Oh my!
Yeah,
that wouldn't even be wouldn't be watchable.
It could just be like touch football or flag football.
Doctors, the whole deal. Yeah, not even flag, because you know it's so funny when you get older, you remember how you moved as a youngster and think you can still do that. And then if it ever gets filmed, I remember a good friend of mine went to a baseball fantasy camp, and he came back raving about this big play he had made. He said, yeah, they got on tape. I made this great catch in center field. And he showed us, and it looked like he was running in slow motion with extra slow motion. And he made this catch, and after he was done, he looked at us and went, I was moving a lot faster in my body. And that's kind of how it all goes.
Charles, that's the truest thing anyone has ever said. Is there's nothing more humbling, not for you because you were actually an athlete, but for the rest of us, the normies, the normos. For the normos, those of us that think we look so good playing a game, and I've thought the same thing. Just if you have to watch yourself on film, for those of us out there that are normal, it's far more cringeworthy than having to hear your voice. You know when you hear what you really sound like versus what it sounds like in your head?
Oh, that's awful.
It's the worst, right? It's the worst. But seeing yourself on tape, and I have seen many of my basketball games on tape, in the moment I think, I'm basically Jamal Crawford, but 5'10". And in reality it's, that's me? No, that can't be me. That's not me. I refuse to believe that's me. Yes, so the Senior Bowl is what you are covering this weekend, and no, Ailish, it is not the geriatrics. Of course, the pandemic is all about, hey, we need to make sure that we protect the elderly better, and here's Ailish 2 years in going, let's put them in full pads and have them run at each other. that's how we're going to do things. It's Ailish. Amazing. So,
that is so great. That is so great.
Senior Bowl.
Colleges used to do that, guys. Did you know that? In the United States, a lot of colleges used to have alumni games. And they would come back and play the varsity, and that was the spring game. You know, when you have spring practice? So the varsity would play an alumni team. Mm-hmm. And it is the most I look back and think, who ever thought that was a great idea? And the alumni, trying to bring their glory days back, couldn't wait to come back and put pads on and put their uniform at their school, and we're going to get this varsity, the whole thing. I'm like, why did anyone think that was a good idea? The only alumni that should have been a rule is that you graduate at 22, you can play until you're 25. And after that, that's it. Because you had guys running around there, couldn't wait to show their grandkids that they played football. And I can't imagine what it was like afterwards and how much missed time at work resulted from guys playing in their alumni game. But people, colleges used to do that. And again, I look back and think, whoever thought that was a good idea in the first place?
Oh, I really didn't anticipate this is where we're going to start today. So I'm trying to be professional and settle back in. It's just, this is really, really too funny. So, yes, you are down at the Senior Bowl. I'm going to start with this, Charles.
Yeah.
What in your opinion is the best coaching vacancy? Because there has, like, we got a lot of stuff to cover with coaches with you today. And I want to start there, though, there are these four jobs remaining. It is starting to tighten up. And we have spent a lot. Some of these teams, I think we were expecting all of them to be open. But which one, in your estimation, is the best available spot?
Well, let me go through my head because I keep getting confused about what's still available.
Do you want me to read them to you? Yeah, Miami, New Orleans, Minnesota, New Orleans, and Houston. Miami, those are four.
Minnesota is closed because it may not be formal. But Kevin O'Connell, the quarterback's coach for the Los Angeles Rams, will be taking that job. That's why Jim Harbaugh is not coaching Minnesota. So Kevin O'Connell's going to have that one. Doug Peterson last night took Jacksonville. So one more time, we have New Orleans, Miami, Houston. Is that it?
That's it now. If we're going with Minnesota is now full, then that's the list.
Well, to me, New Orleans is the best one because of stability, all right? The ownership stability. You have a terrific general manager, Mickey Loomis, who was there, who I think that it'd be very difficult not to work well with. He works very well with coaching staffs. Scouting department is excellent. Jeff Ireland, as the assistant GM, is a guy who could be a general manager in the NFL and be very good at it. That's the one. Miami, obviously, is a powder keg because of the accusations you got from Brian Flores or Stephen Ross as an owner. So there's got to be some doubt in your mind about what's really going on there, and you'd have to really investigate that one. And Houston, let's just say Houston is Houston. I mean, they hired David Culley last year, and everyone knew that was a bridge hire. Not sure we knew it was a one-year bridge hire. And I would not be surprised at all. I mean, by the time we talk next week, I would not be surprised at all if the former quarterback who's never coached in the NFL, Josh McCown, is the next head coach of the Houston Texans.
Okay, so I want you to put in perspective for our listeners how big this Harbaugh thing is, because he flies to Minnesota during National Signing Week, and that seems like it would be a very big deal. That seems like that guy thought he was getting that job.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And there's one mitigating factor, though. National Signing Day used to be the day. I mean, you guys know, for college football, it was the day. But a few years ago, they changed National Signing Day to two different dates. One of them in December, and the second one here in February. So the second one has become the afterthought. That used to be the one where we saw all the guys doing the hat thing, which absolutely drives me insane. You know, these kids having these big, big gym, you know, packed gyms, and, you know, well, I'll think about it, and then they throw this hat aside like it's no big deal, and everyone's put this time and effort into it, and all of it, and they get all disdainful, and you can tell I'm getting old. Get off my lawn, you kids. But it just, you know, I just want to see a little more respect with the whole thing. And it's such a production, and we built these kids up, then they got to get to school, and it's not, they're not always a superstar right away. And then they're confused, and then they want to transfer. But that was the day. Now, because it's really in December, him going and doing this on National Signing Week and that date, it becomes a great story. But the fact of the matter is, they weren't signing very many people, if any, at that time. National signing date nowadays is December, and then you kind of fill your team in off the transfer portal. It's like our version of NFL free agency now. Go get the transfer portal, save some of those scholarships. You're not going to use them all for that reason. You're saving them for if you're getting that free agent type player. But it makes for a great story, and it certainly looked like Jim Harbaugh was going to be the new head coach of the Minnesota Vikings on National Signing Day when he should be back in Michigan with his team. And, boy, that's a heck of a story, right? As I understand it, he went there with the idea that that job was his. The people who were interviewing him had him in with the idea that he was truly interviewed. That's called a disconnect. And by the time it was done, my understanding is that he was not offered the job. He can recommit it back to Michigan. So on National Signing Day, the best signee that Michigan got was re-signing their head coach, Jim Harbaugh, coming back to Michigan, supposedly recommitted for the long haul now for the Wolverine, and off you go. And truthfully, that's the best thing that they had for their program because they finally have some stability. They finally beat Ohio State. They got the college football playoff, won the Big Ten. You get the whole idea. But it was a very weird scenario because, as I understood it, when he left to go to Minnesota, he actually was saying a lot of goodbyes to people in Michigan. Now he'll be going, hello again, I'm back. And it'll be a little awkward phase for them there. But that's not truly unusual with Jim anyway. There's a lot of awkwardness that goes with it, but there's a lot of winning ball games that comes with it as well.
Charles, so the Vikings job's filled, Jaguars job's filled. You just filled the Texans job for us. And then obviously Brian Flores isn't going back to Miami.
Yeah, Vikings that job lead, filled too.
Yeah.
Vikings Flores job is filled too.
Yeah. Flores obviously isn't going back to Miami. That leaves New Orleans. He also has this lawsuit pending. Yep. Does that suggest to you that, you know, Flores is going to be taking a gap year here? Like, there was a lot of chatter initially that, like, some of the teams with vacancies would be very interested because he's a coach that a lot of people are high on, and the Miami situation was obviously a mess. Is he looking at probably a gap year here with all the vacancies starting to fill up?
He might be looking at a gap career. You forget the year. When you levy this type of a lawsuit, it makes it very, very difficult for people to come back and want to hire you because you're talking – think about how this lawsuit reads. You've accused the person who signs your check and owns the team of paying you extra money to tank. Now, that may very well be true. I'm not about to sit here and say what Brian Flores is saying is inaccurate. I don't know. It all has to be proven, though. And those types of things are very difficult to prove unless you have a third person in the room that's going to corroborate your story. Mm-hmm. When he talks about sham interviews in the NFL, he's spot on. There's not even a discussion that there's anything but. But when you think about it, in our world, there's sham interviews everywhere. The barista at Starbucks who wants his or her best friend to get the job will conduct sham interviews with everyone else to give them the job. It happens all the way through. People have dealt with sham interviews their entire lives trying to get places. None of it makes it right. But the idea that people are saying, no, every interview that was done was a great – no, that's not true. Mm-hmm. Not true in regular world. It's not true in the NFL, the whole deal. We've got to figure out how to make all of this right. We've got to figure out how to make it all better. But there is something that a good friend of mine that I was doing work with last night, Alex Marvez on SiriusXM NFL Radio, said. He said, do we all nail the interview the first time we interview in any walk of life? And it's a great point.
Yep.
Rarely do you walk in and it's the first place you interview. Bam! That's the person. That's the guy. That's the woman. Get them the job. It's rare. You have to learn. It's acquired skill sometimes. You get better at it, the whole deal. So it's a very complicated, convoluted deal that we're working with. And I do think that the teams themselves have to expand who's doing the interviews, who they're bringing in on their list, what their criteria is, much more, I hate the term out of the box, but much more expanded interview process. Because a lot of these teams have very closed down deals, 2, 3, 4 people. And a lot of times you have the same 2, 3, 4 people or 5 straight coaches who haven't been successful. standard, the opening and the look, and who's taking a look at these people who are out there, and maybe you'll get some more some more candidates that people hadn't thought of before that may do a good job for you. But hiring is a difficult thing. Getting the job's a difficult thing. I don't think any of us are sitting here thinking that it's an entirely open process, like we would like to believe we know better than that. Mm-hmm. But every single instance where someone doesn't get the job also doesn't mean that it's a closed down process either. We got to take them and look at them one for one. But I would like to see a little bit more of an expansion. And I'll stop with this. There's a man by the name of Jim Caldwell who's been a successful NFL head coach in two stops. Indianapolis went to a Super Bowl with the Colts right out of the gate, won a bunch of ball games. Peyton Manning was his quarterback. That never hurt. We know that. Jim Caldwell also went to the playoffs twice with the Detroit Lions, mm-hmm. which should make him darn near coach of the century, and almost won a third time and got fired on a 9-7 season because there's a new standard and we're going to get beyond that. Yep. And that new regime didn't even come close to that. He coaches quarterbacks really well. Jacksonville had Trevor Lawrence that needs to be taken care of. Chicago had Justin Fields that needs to be taken care of. Houston, you can say Davis Mills with their young quarterback. Jim Caldwell would be ideal. He's not getting any of those jobs, it appears. And to me, that's a failure on the NFL's part.
It absolutely is. And you know, Charles, there's so many layers to the Flores story. I'm glad Blake asked the question that he did. Like, one is that there is reporting now that there is going to be some level of corroboration for the Stephen Ross stuff when it comes to the tanking element of this, and that people are going to corroborate that he did offer that money and that those were said, which is really intense news considering that Stephen Ross came out with a pretty vehement defense of those comments and saying that it was, you know, malicious and lies and all these different things. But like when Blake asked that question, I think that this is being lost a little bit on people is the level of sacrifice that Flores might be making here. Like, the NFL is a boys' club where you do this and you're probably out of the club forever. We saw what ended up happening with Colin Kaepernick. There could be very much a situation here where Flores' career never recovers from this, and that he is, like, seemingly doing something that is for the betterment of the game and for real changes of the game. And yeah, you're down right now in a place where there is just a large congregation of football people. And I do wonder if this is what one of the central conversations is how is this game going to change? How are these things going to change? And whether there is actually any renewed optimism or, cause like some of the stuff you just said where you go, you know, well, they need to put more people in the room. That doesn't make me feel too optimistic about anything actually being meaningful and anything actually moving forward here.
No, and I don't disagree with you. I'm just proposing
for sure
how you could possibly do the job better. But the problem is you have to want to do it better. You have to want to be open to that possibility of someone coaching your team that maybe you hadn't thought of before in terms of what you want in front of your ball club. For some people who own these teams, that's not who they want representing their franchise and group. I was very interested in seeing where Jerry Jones is the owner of the Dallas Cowboys. When the Brian Flores news broke, Jerry Jones had a very nice, eloquent thing that concluded with, you know, we've got to do better. We've got to do better as a league. Okay. Let's start with in-house. Mm-hmm. There ever been a black head coach of the Dallas Cowboys under Jerry Jones? No. How many black coordinators has Jerry Jones ever had? I can't sit here and give you the number, but I bet you it's less than what's on one hand that you have. I almost guarantee that. All right? Does he have a general manager? No, he's never named a general manager. The highest-ranking person who does a fantastic job of player personnel is Will McClay, who's chosen to stay at the organization, and I believe he feels very well taken care of. But he won't even give him the general manager title. Yeah, Jerry's out in front saying, we have to do better. We must. Well, how about let's start at home? I mean, you got a chance right there to do better. It's not happening, okay? I mean, the first thing I'm sure he would sit with me and say, well, look who my quarterback is. It's Dak Prescott. Yes, you drafted him in the fourth round. I don't think you ever expected this to happen. Unfortunately, Tony Romo got hurt. Dak seized it, and off he went. I'm not trying to do that to go against Jerry Jones. All I'm saying is there are a lot of words, there's a lot of esoterica, there's a lot of, yes, we must do better. okay, let's start with who the people are saying we must do better. Don't see it there, so it makes it very difficult. And I'll conclude with this. I think you're spot on about Brian Flores. He may very well sacrifice his career as an NFL head coach. Kurt Flood in baseball, when he challenged the reserve clause, which you now know as modern free agency, he sacrificed his career. He was an all-star player. Bachelor Pariah, people didn't want to play him anymore. He was done. And he was a tremendous player. But the league thought the reserve clause was such a big deal because they didn't want free agency. They didn't want the money to explode. They didn't want anything. They wanted to keep it down what it was. Jim Bouton wrote his book, Ball Four. And at that time frame, it was the late 60s.
Yep.
And that year, the league minimum went from $9,000 for a player to 12, or 12 to 15 or something like that in the late 1960s. And there's a great story about the general manager who called the player in and said, congratulations, you had a heck of a year. We're moving you up to the league minimum. Let's call it $15,000. We're moving you up to $15,000. The player was so excited. Oh, that, thank you, sir. Appreciate that. Walked out, was telling people, hey, I got bumped up to 15, blah, blah, blah. What a great bonus they gave me, the whole deal. And finally, one of the other players like, dude, you had to. The minimum went to 15 this year. You didn't get a bonus. He just gave you the minimum again. That's what it was like back then. Kurt Flood lost his career over that. You mentioned Kaepernick. This could very well be it for Brian Flores. That's why I'm saying it's not a gap year, I don't think, unless there's going to be a really courageous team that hires him, no matter what's going on with the lawsuit. But I don't have a lot of optimism that that would happen.
Yeah. And if you even just continue the Bouton thing, I don't think Bouton ever was welcomed back by the New York Yankees. I think that he was banned for life. Like, they had Yankees days.
It took a long time.
Yeah, so then maybe he was, but it was it was a long time.
Remember they always had that Yankee Day in July,
right? And he never,
yeah,
he was never invited.
That big day in July, the Veterans, the Alumni Day. It took years before Jim Bouton was welcomed back to Yankee Stadium.
Exactly, and I would anticipate the same thing with Brian Flores. And I'm glad that you brought up the Jerry Jones thing, though, just simply from this fact is, like, you're right. This isn't an indictment of Jerry Jones. This isn't like, hey, taking a shot at Jerry Jones. I don't think that anyone should interpret it that
not
way.
At all.
I think that the way that it should be just interpreted is for everybody to just sort of look inward a little bit, and that's a little bit of our culture right now is everyone sort of is just says something, and you get your statement out there, and you go, hey, I stand against something, or I stand for something, and then we're not really expected as much to do action because you put it on a social media account and it's kind of, oh, well, then you did your part today. And I really hope that that example just kind of gets used for the league and that gets used for everybody who says that they want some meaningful change, that acknowledges that there is a problem, that there has to be more than just a PR statement now. There has to be more than just, you sharing a link in your Instagram story or on your Twitter account, that there has to actually be meaningful movement. And my hope is that the NFL gets some of this right. I hope it is. I have my doubts when that's the way that the response is that we all agree that it's going to be unlikely that a very good NFL head coach ends up losing his career over speaking out on something that we all acknowledge is a problem. Like that feels bad. But I don't even know how to even move it forward. It's obviously a very frustrating situation. It's obviously an awful situation. But yes, I think that this is an opportunity for everybody involved again to look at this as, what are you doing that is more than a post or PR?
I think you stated it very, very well, and I don't have a lot to add to that. That was really well stated. One thing for all of us to keep in mind as people and try and take yourself and put in the situation I'm about to give, and again, doesn't mean that it's the absolute correct thing, doesn't mean it's the right way to go, doesn't mean anything. If you are a person in charge of anything, it's your company, it's your team, it's your organization, you are the person responsible. When someone comes at you and tells you, I want you to hire X, Y, and Z, and here's why, and you're not really down for that, how are you going to respond to that? Because it's your team, it's your organization, it's your money. No one likes to be told how they're spending their money. No one likes to be told how they're doing their business. that's why it's a very difficult proposition, even though, as you put it so eloquently, we all want to act like we're doing the right thing. We all want people to see us doing the right thing. We all want to support doing the right thing. But when push comes to shove, I want to hire who I want to hire because that's my money. And that's where it becomes difficult, because that's a whole lot of money among 32 different people, groups, teams, families that have a stake in this National Football League.
Charles Davis, always, always, always a pleasure. Thanks for making time for us this morning, man.
Hey, thank you, guys. I appreciate it very much. You take care of yourselves. Next week, let's hope that we are talking about some meaningful change that may have happened, make some meaningful hires, and we're talking about the biggest game of the year, the Super Bowl. Bengals-Rams, the second straight team to have a home game, the Rams this year. It'll be great.
I think it is going to be great. Charles, we'll talk to you then, man.
All right, you guys take care. Be good now. Appreciate the time.
That's Charles Davis, NFL on CBS. And I'll just say this, like, you know, when you see Josh McDaniels get hired, right, and he goes to the Raiders, a place that has historically hired black coaches, it's not the best feeling to look around and say, well, that was probably the only spot. You see, I'm sure Josh McCown could end up being a good coach in Houston, but the idea that you would hire Josh McCown over some of the other candidates is obviously, I think, a pretty quick way of identifying how some of the problem is here and what Charles is talking about in terms of these teams identifying their candidates before there's a proper review, and how it ends up becoming this you know, echo chamber of the same request from an owner, that it's, hey, let's get this thing and let's overlook the entire process. And how much of, I think the main thing is that the Rooney Rule just is, it's farcical. The idea that it was just, hey, you're selling people on the idea of giving black coaches an interview, and it's kind of like it reminds me a little bit of the college scholarship thing, where you go, you're giving an athlete an education, right? You go, okay, but that doesn't mean that this should be complete. That doesn't mean that that should be the entire picture. That doesn't mean that you should diminish the other parts of what needs to be done here. And so, yes, of course, there can be some positive that comes out of a rule like that. But overall, it's been a failure in terms of the way that it's supposed to be in practice. And so, yes, I do hope that what ends up happening this week is that that dialogue does end up continuing, and that you do see the NFL start to pivot into a place where there is more pressure on, I guess, transparency of hiring, because I don't know what other solution you have. You're not automatically removing owners and replacing them with black owners, because that would obviously enact meaningful change, but you can't just strip franchises away from people. And so the only other option here to me seems to be more transparency with hires. I don't know how you actually end up getting that. That just seems very, very far in terms of what you'll get. And I'm worried that what the end result will be is just another black coach losing his career.
The trouble is that the stuff is subjective, right? Like obviously the league's preference for white coaches is not a subjective thing. Like, there's data on that. There's evidence. What I worry, and what the Rooney Rule doesn't address, is it's very easy for an owner or a GM to be like, well, we like that candidate better. Like, they checked off this or that. You look at the Jaguars situation with Byron Leftwich, right, where the entire NFL community thinks that it's a layup. And then because him and Trent Baalke don't see eye to eye, or Baalke's, you know, aggressive with the power play or whatever, and then they go to a white retread coach. And sure, maybe Doug Peterson ends up being good. Like, there's nothing saying that that might not work out. There's nothing saying if Leftwich got there that, you know, Baalke's GM moves wouldn't disrupt things, and then suddenly Leftwich looks like a bad coach because of the roster around him. What the Rooney Rule did, I guess, is it at least forced teams to look at black candidates around the league, because they had to name them and identify them and interview them. But yeah, it's not enough. It's not even close to enough. It's time for something to chew on, brought to you by Great Canadian Meats. This isn't directly related to the race element of coaching in the NFL, but the something to chew on today is, I am beyond fed up with the clown shoes approach the Jaguars take to everything. Everything. The Urban Meyer saga, the ownership saga, just how bad they've been. You lead the league in NFLPA grievances year after year. And now you have this layup of a coaching hire that everyone in football thinks is the right choice. And sometimes, yeah, group thinks not right, but Byron Leftwich with the Jaguars made a lot of sense. And even if you didn't like that, the way this was all handled is just an absolute disaster. The something to chew on, and I'm leaning on you guys for this. At 9:30, JD and Ailish are going to make the case for a couple of teams that I could root for instead of the Jacksonville Jaguars if I'm fully fed up and I want to pretend that the Cons own All Elite Wrestling and that's it, and there's no football team there, there's no association there. No disrespect to Alex Marvez, who Charles mentioned earlier and works for both AEW and the NFL Network. So chew on that. Text us at 590-590 who you think would be a good fit and why and what your criteria kind of would be for choosing a new team. But JD and Ailish are going to set that up for me at 9:30.
I'll give you a tease. I have the following criteria for you. Fun place to visit and go watch a game. Mm-hmm. Good young QB.
Mm-hmm.
Chance to win. And you don't get considered an annoying bandwagon fan. Because honestly, I would have suggested, for example, hey, jump on the Bills. Jump on the Bengals.
Don't get ahead of it now.
No, you're not allowed to do those things in my opinion. But I'm just saying that those are my thoughts. So you can't. Those are my four criteria that I wasn't aware of that last night. Well, I know, but here's the thing, Ailish. Ailish is going to pitch the Bills. Oh, what a Sakel surprise. She's going to show up and pitch you that you should cheer for the Bills with her.
Here's a little something to chew on also. Why JD gets to set the criteria for my new team is a little curious to me. But you guys chew on that.
You don't like that criteria? That's not smart?
We have to take a
break. I didn't put in good work for you?
When
we come back. You know what? Never mind. Scratch it. You find your own way. Stay in Jacksonville.
We're going to talk to Stephen Brunt, co-host of the Fan Drive Time, when we come back. We're going to talk. He had a great piece on Tom Brady this week. We'll talk some Olympics. We'll talk MLB, CBA. That's coming up next on the Fan Morning Show, Sports at 590, The Fan.
Yum, yum, yum.
The smartest takes on the biggest stories in sports. The Fan Drive Time with Ben Ennis and Stephen Brunt. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Fan Morning Show, Sports at 590 Fan. Right now, if you turned on Sportsnet, you would see Canada entering the Olympic Stadium, representing the best country in the world. Let's get Stephen Brunt's perspective on what his favorite and most exciting moment I'm looking forward to at the Olympics right now. Co-host of the Fan Drive Time. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. How are you?
I'm good. I just watched a bunch of good-looking Canadians walk into the stadium in Beijing, and it got me thinking, what are you most excited about? What Olympic story are you most intrigued about this year?
Boy, that's a good question. You know, it's I think I'm still kind of processing the fact that it's happening, to be honest. I think a lot of people are, right? Like, and I know it's Olympics do sneak up on people sometimes, even in normal times. You go, man, I hadn't thought about that, and here they are, the Olympics, and you know, then you get kind of immersed in the 17 days and swept away by it. But I think because of the world we've been living in, it's just it's been harder, you know. And went through the debate about whether the NHL players would go, and now you know the endless talk about getting people there and the testing and the crazy circumstances under which people are living there right now. So I'm kind of hoping it sweeps me over and immerse. I get to immerse myself in it. I'm not sure though, man. It feels a little arm's length this time. It really does. It's maybe that's me.
It's not you. It's me 100%. First of all, the time of it. Second of all, where it's being played and where that place is politically. Like it just does feel very. I gotta admit that this is the weirdest Olympics of my life. I just don't care. I don't really feel all that great about participating in it, and it just feels very muted. And even Brunt, like, think about years past with Winter Olympics. Canada is all about just hyping up stories right before this thing happens of here are Olympians, here are the stories, here are the people, here are the angles. I don't know, you've been seeing that, you've been feeling that. I haven't seen a lot of that.
Well, yeah, less so, I guess. You know, like if you wanted to find it, you could. Like there's lots of winter sports on. You know, the CBC does a good job showing winter sports all through the season. They show World Cup stuff. So you could find it. You could find, you're skiing and bobsled and, you know, snowboarding and all that stuff. But yeah, it is different. And again, I think you're partially right that it's the China factor, the COVID factor, and this is not, you know, like, I think expectations, maybe this Canadian team is the sports that we traditionally have had a big, you know, stake in, like figure skating, for instance, where we're probably not going to do a whole lot of figure skating at these Olympics. There's no alpine skiers that are probably going to be on the podium from Canada. Obviously, the NHL, you have no idea what that hockey tournament's going to look like.
No.
It's just the men's hockey tournament. The women's hockey tournament, you know exactly what it's going to look like. The gold medal game is going to be Canada and the U.S. and it'll be awesome.
Ailish, she says it could be Finland. She's like, Finland's really great. She keeps hyping
up
Finland.
I never said they'd be in the gold medal game. I said that they'll probably win bronze.
They're minus 2,000 favorites against Finland today. Ailish is like, they're the number three team.
Yeah, well, so the Americans just beat them 5-2, right? So it wasn't 12-1.
Yeah,
hey, so yeah, Canada will do well in freestyle skiing and snowboarding and a bunch of other events, but I'm not even sure. You know, like you saw who the flag bearers are. You know, Charles Amelin, who's been around mm-hmm. forever, and Poulin, who's been around forever, kind of, and that's the way you normally do it, is kind of honor figures from the past. But I don't know who. I couldn't tell you who's our breakout star this time. I hope there is one. You know, I think Canada will win some medals, but I'm honestly not sure.
Okay, so can I? You know what else? Because Canada doesn't care about winter sports anymore. We're a summer sports country. We're a soccer nation. And okay,
yes.
I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this, but I will say this, Brian. I cannot believe how much I love this team and how it has just completely transformed who I am as a sports fan in terms of what I care about. Like, if you would have told me that I was going to go to a soccer game on an NFL Championship Sunday weekend, even a year ago, I would have laughed in your face and told you that you don't know anything about me and that it was the dumbest thing I'd ever heard. If you would have told me that watching a Leafs game, I'd be bored out of my skull because I just watch soccer and I can't go from watching that to hockey. Same thing. I just, what is the most shocking thing to you about all of this with Canada soccer? Because there's a ton of things that are going on with this team and how they've done, but just to you, someone that has been a fan of the program for forever, what is the thing that is just resonating with you that you just can't get over?
Geez, everything, you know, being a fan of the program, like, or following the program anyway, has been, it's worse than being a Leaf fan. You know, it's been really hard and really soul destroying a lot of times. But I think, you know, I was at the match in Toronto at BMO in 2019, the fall of 2019, when they beat the Americans, and in the stands as a fan with my son, and it's one of the best sporting events I've ever attended live. Honest to God, the vibe, right? Because it was just, this is possible. The sense that this is possible. And, you know, John Herdman, I know pretty well from his days with the women's team, and I root for him personally. But to see that group out there, you know, playing with style and skill, and they're Canadians, you know, and they beat the hated Americans. You know, and then, the next match, they lost the Americans in the U.S., and I think we all kind of, most of us who follow the team thought, well, yeah, this, you know, it's not, Qatar's not happening, but we're going to host in 2026, so we're on the road to somewhere. But they're coming, you know, coming back, you know, kind of mid-pandemic and suddenly having evolved, right, taking and having a couple more, adding some players, and I think it's the joy they play with, it's the belief, you know, it's the fact that, you know, John, who is a very, I think he's a very good tactical coach, but also a very good motivator. The same stuff that worked with the women's team is working with guys who play, you know, for Bayern Munich and big, huge European clubs where they make a ton of money. That you could get players to buy in and not just roll their eyes. It's, you know, and I say, and players choosing to play for Canada when they have an option, like Steven Eustachio. Like, I've spent most of my life watching players opt not to play for Canada if they had an option. So it's great, and you know, and it's look, but there's a. This is catching a wave that's already happened, which is soccer in North America, soccer in Canada. Like, it's just been waiting for this. There's a ton of there's a soccer culture here, and now it's going to now we're going to have our own team in the biggest event in the world. It's I'm the magnitude of I cannot overstate what that's going to be.
It's going to be awesome. And from the World Cup and the Olympics to another sport everyone loves that comes up every couple years. Labor negotiations. So the MLB and MLBPA still button heads. We found out yesterday that one side has requested arbitration from the National Arbitration Board. How are you? John Morosi yesterday expressed some optimism about where things are going there. And I know calling an arbitrator is a little curious at this stage in the negotiations. Like, usually that's more of an impasse move. But some baseball insiders expressed some optimism that, hey, maybe this is, you know, some people in the ownership group trying to nudge other owners toward a more reasonable stance. I guess at a high level, do you share John Morosi's optimism that this can get sorted out in a way that we don't lose too much of 2022 baseball?
I would have. I'm not. You know, the players have already rejected the arbitrator, so I'm not sure. So much for that little glimmer of light. And Morosi is a very optimistic guy, so that, you know, maybe that's just John's natural bubbly enthusiasm coming through. But I think what we don't know yet is, you know, what's the actual deadline for both sides here, right? Like, how much are they willing to sacrifice? Because it's all posturing until then. And we've seen a whole lot of posturing. So, look, they're obviously going to sacrifice. Spring training's not going to start on time. You can have a month-long spring training instead of 6 weeks. That's fine. You can have a shortened season. They're going to be willing. I think the owners are willing to sacrifice games. And the question is going to be, when the players start missing paychecks, how far they're going to be willing to go. Because that's what this is about, right? There's some kind of philosophical issues here, but it's not like, once, you know, not the owners are trying to impose a cap like the, you know, the NHL 2013-2014. This is, you know, more kind of, you know, the players need a win. And, you know, the owners are going to strong arm them the same way they strong armed them by imposing the shortened schedule. You know, and just said, well, we can, you know, we can, so we will. So, you know, battle of wills are not good. You know, they're not. Because it comes down to kind of proving things to the, you know, either you're proving things to the players in your membership, or you're trying to prove things to the owners. And I wish they were going to wreck a 95 loss Jay season. I think that'd be fine, you know, shorten one of those. But it's February. They should be reporting in 2 weeks, and they're not going to report in 2 weeks. And I don't think opening day is happening on opening day.
It sucks, man, especially this Jays season, right? We ended that season with they come up a game short of the wild card. And our very first show as the Fan Morning Show, JD Ailish and I, was that morning after. They didn't make it. And there was just so much optimism still about what they had done, what step they had taken, and where they were going. And obviously, you know, you don't want to do the whole Toronto is the center of the universe thing, but of all the teams, it does feel a little bit like the Jays are going to be one of the teams that suffers here, both because this is the start of their contention window, and if what we're hearing about some of the changes to the pre-arb system, or even, you know, the speed at which players reach free agency, like, those are things that are going to materially affect a young team ready to compete like the Blue Jays. I guess just what's your feel around the Blue Jays organization? Like, are they frustrated that this year of all years and this team of all teams is possibly going to have their season shortened? And then, you know, we know baseball, 162 games doesn't get us to the best team sometimes. You know, 120 certainly might not.
Yeah, you saw how aggressive they were, you know, before everything shut down, right? It's obvious, you know, the goal this year is win the World Series. And I know in theory the goal every year is win the World Series, but it's not. So that they are, you know, they have money to spend, and they have, you know, some flexibility in terms of, you know, how their roster is constructed, and they're going for it. And that's, you know, as a fan, that's the most exciting time, is when your team is ready to go for it. And as you say, have a win, you know, 3 or 4 year window here where they should be in it every year. Now, you know, like, I'm not going to speak for Mark Shapiro, but I assume he knew this exactly how this was going to play out, because they do talk about these things. So they've probably known for months how this was going to play out. So I'm guessing it's not a surprise. And, you know, the baseball people, so everybody below him in the organization, kind of just trying to do their job as best they can, and probably hoping, kind of like fans are. But, you know, like, again, I don't think this is at an ownership level and in the executive level. I'm sure they knew that this was a real possibility.
You know, what I learned today is less of you, more Morosi. Morosi, never again. I'm never having you on for CBS. You're like, oh, season's not going to start. I'm like, I want baseball, bro. Like, I still care about that more than Canada soccer. So bring that back. Like, don't make me do this. And it's like, and Morosi was like, it's going to be great. It's going to be amazing. I was like, yes, Johnny. And I was living in that world until you and Blake just shattered it. You just shattered it for me. I'm back in the doldrums. Sucks for the Jays, and we don't even get to see the Jays. That's what today is. Brutal. I'm
heartbroken. We all need more Morosi. More Morosi. Look out the window here. It's gray. There's snow. No. It's February.
He loves the Olympics too. He's so high on Owen Power. He cares more about this Canadian men's team than just about anyone.
He does. He lives in a different world than the rest of us. God love him. But
I know. God. It's just be so nice to be happy like that. That must be so cool.
Yes.
God. Okay. I wish. Stephen Brunt, this was great as always, man. Thanks for coming on.
All right. Thanks, guys. See ya.
See you, man. Stephen Brunt of Writer's Block, which, boy, I hope they're doing some more. That now they owe me a whole episode where him and Ennis do positive stories going into baseball.
That's what I do every single day, and you don't like it.
I'm glad you mentioned Ennis, because you're calling his show by the old name. It's the Fan Drive time.
Writer's Block.
The Fan Drive. But Ennis isn't a writer. Come on.
Yeah, you know what happens.
You bet on the wrong teams. Bet on the wrong.
I don't know. I have no excuse.
JD can't figure out the difference between men and women on the bet slip. He doesn't know what his best friend does for the radio show. And I'm bringing up CBA stuff. I apologize. Nope. I said pre-arb, and JD fell asleep on his keyboard.
It's Friday. I had a bad brain week. My brain was never really here the entire week. I never really got it together. I was doing my best because I wouldn't call myself a soldier, but other people might if they knew, you know, just how hard I work and just the amount of energy I put into this.
It wasn't with you in the gym, all that stuff. Let's be honest, though. Yeah. You've had a bad brain fiscal. This hasn't been a week. This has been slowly deteriorating.
I think that... You know what I'm learning from this job? Sleep might be important. It might. So they say, some people have been saying for a while that you got to sleep. And I've been saying nuts to them. And it turns out all those scientists and doctors might know a thing or two about the sleep thing.
We're 4 months in and I still haven't figured out how to nap. So I'm just adjusting to the five and a half. Thing.
I think napping makes it worse. There's just no good solution to this.
I just can't do it anyway.
All die young.
Guys, I nap every single day.
Yeah, we know.
You know what? That's where you're a hockey player, where it's in your blood.
That's true.
It's
just I can nap anywhere, anytime.
Yes.
I usually nap while you're talking, actually, so.
Okay, now it's bitter in here, so let's take a break. Let's come back. Let's get Ailish back on our team. Ailish just mad because she's like, I'm so excited for Olympics. And then I'm going, run.
All you guys do is just crap on the Olympics. Like, I'm like, guys, it's beautiful stories. It's wonderful. People wait their whole lives to represent Canada. And you're like, nah.
Yeah, it's cool. Just go over there. Go to the country where you can't even bring your own laptop or cell phone. And what's the reasons for that? Oh, no reason. Just that's fine. It's fine there. Let's play games. Yay. Why are we all here? Why are we wearing masks? Oh, it's all fun and games. Yay.